Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Real Music Talk with Music Works NYC podcast. I'm the director of Music Works, Jesse Newman. So glad to have you with us here today for another audio deep dive, this time into the world of vocals and guitar. So vocals and guitar is maybe one of the broadest topics you could ever imagine. So good job, Jesse Newman. What I mean by that is we're going to focus on just a few examples today of singers who are making music either primarily with just vocals and guitar, both acoustic and electric, or starting from that point. You know, people write songs in all different ways. They have different processes. Sometimes the chords come first, sometimes the lyrics come first, sometimes it's a combination. And we'll have some singer-songwriters on the show to talk more about that. But today we're just going to focus on a few different examples, different styles, but the main relationship being between the voice and the guitar. And we have both male and female singers, some with some additional instruments coming in as well, some a little more produced than others. I can tell you that even though it seems very simple, miking guitar and voice is actually one of the most complicated or more difficult things to do from an engineer standpoint because they are so exposed. You do want the sound of the notes from the guitar, but you also want some level of the actual percussive picking sound of the pick against the strings. Obviously, strumming can be more percussive than sort of finger picking out different notes one at a time. Also, if you're dealing with electric guitar, that's a whole other animal because you're using the sound of the amplifier and combining that with the sound of the actual pick on the strings and that whole loop. And anyway, there's really a lot of room for both technique and art. And of course, the relationship between the voice and the chords on the guitar, or the notes on the guitar, I should say, the sounds, is always different depending on the singer's individual voice and the range, et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to listen to a few different examples. This first one, this group is a trio of sisters. They're actual legitimate sisters. They're called the Staves. They grew up singing together. I think they're all in their sort of mid to late 20s to mid to late 30s from England. They have really, just like you would imagine, uncanny sort of subliminal telepathic kind of connection. It's really a special thing to hear them sing. And this is a studio version. The album was produced by a man named Justin Vernon, who goes by the stage name Bon Iver. So there is some production involved, but the main focus is the acoustic guitar and the three of their voices. Often when they perform, it's just sort of the three of them circled around one microphone. Here, there's a little more separation, but you'll get the idea. And this is a cover of a really iconic and beautiful song, Bruce Springsteen's I'm on Fire by the Staves.
Ooh. Sometimes it's like someone took a knife, baby edgy and dull, and cut a 6-inch valley through the middle of my skull. At night I wake up with the sheets soaking wet and a freight train running through the middle of my head. And you cool my desire.
Was the Staves trio of sisters from England working with Justin Vernon, the producer, also known as the performer Bon Iver, with their cover and arrangement of the classic Bruce Springsteen song I'm on Fire. So many gorgeous layers there, starting with this sort of lo-fi, almost like a out-of-tune radio filtered piano, and then when we get to that acoustic guitar, it's so clear, you can hear the finger-picking pattern. And I love how the voices, much like a lot of their work, the individual singers take turns doing different lines from the lyrics, and then they harmonize together. There's a real give and take, and of course they build it to a beautiful climax, getting to the end and filling up with those arrangements. To me, they don't sound gratuitous. It sounds like a really natural sort of welling up of sound and color and texture. So really excellent group. I highly encourage you to take a listen to them. I'm going to switch over to one of my favorite artists, someone I've been listening to for a long time, a man named Josh Ritter, who is originally from Idaho and went to Oberlin Conservatory and studied this and that and has been writing songs for a very long time, has since developed quite a following, quite a career as a performer, singer, songwriter, and composer. This song of his is called The Temptation of Adam. The lyrics are sort of a play on, well, not a play, it's a story of this imagined nuclear missile silo that he and his love interest climb into, and they are in this bunker way, way underground, sort of slowly falling in love as they guard this missile silo, waiting for the order to launch, should there be, you know, a nuclear destruction scenario. So, which all sounds incredibly dark as I say it, but really at the heart of it, it's a love story between these two characters, and in many ways the lyrics mirror the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. So again, you'll hear the relationship between his voice and this guitar pattern. There are several points where, without getting too music nerdy about it, there are several points where he'll kind of hang on a chord a little bit longer than he needs to, or extend it, you know, to sort of match the phrase that he's saying, so he's not following these preconceived, established patterns of four bars, but he's really using the guitar to augment the story he's singing with his vocals. There are a lot of really clever lines. I would encourage you to go back and listen to these lyrics over and over. We'll get to a bunch of them in a minute, but for now, let's take a listen to Josh Ritter, The Temptation of Adam.
Thank you. If this was a cold war, we could keep each other warm. I said on the first occasion that I met Marie, we were crawling through the hedge that was the missile silo door, and I don't think that she really thought that much of me. I never had to learn to love her like I learned to love the bomb. She just came along and started to ignore me. But as we waited for the big one, I started singing her my songs, and I think she started feeling something for me. We passed the time with crosswords that she thought to bring inside. What five letters spell apocalypse, she asked me. I won her over singing W-W-I-I-I. We smiled and we both knew that she'd misjudged me. Oh, Marie, it was so easy to fall in love with you. It felt almost like a home of sorts or something. And you would keep the warhead missile silo good as new. And I watched you with my thumb above the button. Then one night you found me in my army issue card, and you told me of your flash of inspiration. You said fusion was the broken heart that's lonely's only thought, and all night long you drove me wild with your equations. Oh Marie, do you remember all the time we used to take making love and then ransack the rations? When I think about you leaving now and the avalanche cascades, and my eyes get washed away in chain reactions. Stay, then we could stick pins in the map of all the places where you thought that love would be found. But I would only need one pin to show where my love's at, in a top secret location 300 feet under the ground. Or we could hold each other close and stay up every night, looking up into the dark like it's the night sky, and pretend this giant missile an old oak tree instead, carve our name and hearts into the warhead. Oh Marie, there's something tells me things just won't work out above, that our love would live a half-life on the surface. So at night while you are sleeping, I hold you closer just because, as our time grows short, I get a little nervous. So I think about the big one, W-W-I-I-I. Would we ever really care? The world had ended. You could hold me here forever like you're holding me tonight. I think about that great big button and I'm tempted.
There's just so much going on in that song. If you take a look at the lyrics, it's really beautiful poetry, and there's a couple of lines that stick out in particular to me. I love when he says, you said fusion was the broken heart that's lonely's only thought, and all night long you drove me wild with your equations. You know, like the weaving of the love story and the nuclear physics, which I know nothing about, and I'm sure Josh does not know all that much about either, but the way he gets to the essence of that, the intermixing of joy and pain, and here we are in this crazy situation, but at the same time exploring this love affair. The other line that just kills me is when he says, oh Marie, if we could stay, then we could stick pins in the map of all the places where you thought that love would be found. And then his voice goes up to this falsetto. He says, but I would only need one pin to show where my heart's at. Now, as a silly personal peeve, I don't like the expression, where are you at? Where's that at? You know, but there's something so poetic about the way he lays that lyric down. I would only need one pin to show him where my heart's at. And then he tells her, as if we don't know, in a top secret location, 300 feet under the ground. I also really love the way the song ends. If you listen to the very last sort of section, stanza of the verse, he says, would we ever really care if the world had ended? And he's thinking about how, you know, maybe if this threat was over and we came back to the surface, that maybe we would not be together, we wouldn't stay in love. And he thinks, I look at that great big red button and I'm tempted, which is such a loaded line, that idea that he's almost willing to blow up the world because it would mean he'd get to stay here with her and forget everything else. And I mean, obviously, I'm not going to get into the politics, but that's probably not the best way to start a relationship or maintain a relationship. But the sentiment is so recognizable that any of us who really, truly experience love, that that's sort of the idea, is that there's nowhere else we'd rather be, no one else we'd rather be with. So kudos to Josh Ritter. Again, The Temptation of Adam, a beautiful song. It's off the album The Historical Conquests of Josh Ritter, and he has several more albums after that one as well. The next song coming up is called Loving You by a singer named Rachel Reese. She also performs under the stage name Her Crooked Heart. She's from Minneapolis, where there is a really vibrant music scene. And if you can follow me here, so her saxophonist, who's not on this track, but his name is Mike Lewis, and he plays with Bon Iver, who is Justin Vernon, who produced the album for The Staves, which we listened to just before. In fact, he is probably on that album, although not on the song we listened to. Anyway, just an example of music community and how people are connected. I met this woman, Rachel Reese, at a teen arts workshop a couple of years ago. She was running the choir, and because I'm sort of a dummy, I just assumed that she was, you know, some music teacher, and she was doing her job. She was very nice and did a great job with them, and we worked together a little bit. And then I went home, you know, maybe the second day, and went to my computer and looked up her music and was totally, totally blown away. Her lyrics are such beautiful poetry. She has a fantastic instrument and she uses it well. She plays guitar, acoustic, but mostly electric, actually, although this song is acoustic. And she's just so skillful and nuanced in the way she weaves together her stories and the music that's around them. We're going to listen to a song called Loving You. That's very clearly a sort of post-breakup, post-mortem love letter to her partner. And the guitar style is very different. You'll hear it's a very sort of heavy, dramatic, hard-on-your-sleeve kind of strum, which suits the song very much. And also the way, in talking about the relationship between voice and guitar, the way she sings is much less controlled sounding. It's obviously very controlled. She's doing exactly what she wants to do, but the effect is much more, I should say, dynamic. She's soaring up and down, and the volume changes, and it's just, it's a real raw emotional kind of melody that goes through. I would say to look out for one lyric in particular towards the end, where she says something like, loving you is a house on fire, and both of us were never going to survive. And this is so silly, but I kind of wish the song would end right there. She continues, and obviously what she continues with is great, but I like that sentiment of, you know, just sort of like throwing your hands up. You know, it's a messy, love is messy. And the lyrics are messy too. It's like, we both know we weren't going to get out of this. And it's not a defeatist perspective, in my opinion. I think she's just being realistic and talking about the way we get through things is not always smooth. And it's clearly something many of us can relate to. So this is Rachel Reese, a.k.a. Her Crooked Heart, performing Loving You.
Took some time, but finally I think I'm ready to love someone new. But before I do, I wanna catalog the truth of what it was like. loving you. And both of us were never gonna survive. And loving you was walking out that door, my hair smelling of smoke and your cologne. And
the Minneapolis-based artist Rachel Reese, known as Her Crooked Heart, with her song Loving You. So acrobatic and skillful and raw emotion coming through. And I love the way that she constantly and continually asserts, I want to love again. This idea that loving you meant getting over you and putting it in words. And, you know, it's such a cliche to write a song about a relationship you had, but yet, like the best artist, Rachel Reese finds a way to make that sentiment fresh and pertinent. So you can check out the rest of her stuff. Her Crooked Heart is her stage name. We're going to move to a singer who's been gaining a lot of attention lately, another English singer named Laura Marling. She was just recently featured on Ed O'Brien's album, solo album. Ed O'Brien is the guitarist for Radiohead. She did some really beautiful singing on that. And she has a Tiny Desk home edition. So this is not only stripped down Tiny Desk, but now nobody can even go into the Tiny Desk. So she's at home playing guitar. She is playing in a sort of hybrid style. It's not quite as aggressively strummed as what we just heard with Rachel Reese. But it's also not as delicate finger picking wise. It's a very even, kind of shimmery feeling. I don't think I'm unique in noticing that she has a very Joni Mitchell-like quality, both in her voice and her vibrato and her phrasing, and also in the fact that she's using some alternate tuning. So she's tuning the guitar open strings to match some pitches that create a kind of wash rather than fingering every single one and dealing with the making things in tune or not. This is a song called Held Down. And again, I really like the way she adjusts her phrasing. If you listen to the studio version, it's a little bit different because she has an entire band with her. So there are some sections that she'll sing a phrase and then finishes out the four-bar section, or there's some other instrument that's adding something to reply. In this situation, because it's just her and her guitar, she makes some choices to move on more quickly and to change the way her phrases are laid out, and they sound fantastic. I think that it would even work in a full band version as well, but just another example of how the relationship between you and the guitar, and this is only her and her acoustic guitar, informs the decisions you make and changes the way you approach a melody or song. Even after it's written, you may make changes to perform it in the most effective way. So this is Laura Marling singing solo with Held Down.
I woke up, it was 4 a.m, clear as I held it, you'd already gone. Note said, dear, you know I hate to disappear, but the days are short and the nights are getting long. And I just meant to tell you that I don't want to get you wrong. If I think about now with my legs wrapped around you, how many times before have you seen me run? Kind of twist that you'd leave like this, just drop my wrist and say, well, that's us done. I was just gonna tell you that I don't want to get you wrong. Get lost in the crowd, be seen or unseen. You mean, 'cause we all want to be here now, and we all want to be held down. Well, you sent me a book, which I gave half a look, but I just don't care for it, and I cannot get through. You're writing again, and I'm glad, old friend, just make sure you write me out of where you get to. I was just gonna tell you that I don't like to be let down. I get lost in the crowd where I'm seen and unseen. Dear, you know I hate to disappear, but the days are short and the nights are getting long. I was just gonna tell you that I don't want to get you wrong. Get lost in the crowd, be seen or unseen. You mean
Again, that's Laura Marling doing her own at-home version of the Tiny Desk Concert with her song Held Down. I just think it's worth noting, you know, none of these songs are really super produced, but this is a take that she did live, and then there's actually another song that follows after it. I can't imagine that she did more than one or two or maybe three takes of the whole thing. She projects such an air of confidence and clarity, and you know, comparing her singing style and that sort of falsetto, the high, when she jumps up to that high register, even just to what we heard with Rachel Reese, you can see that she's using it in a different way. Her relationship to that, her relationship between the vocal technique and the lyric is much more strident, it's much more clear. It's very sort of sails above the evenness of that open tune guitar. And then she uses her vibrato, that ha, 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 ha. That was a terrible example, but you know, the way she's sort of regulating the breath on the long notes is very effective. We're going to listen in a minute to another singer who has a really distinctive vibrato sound, but just again, examples of the way even similar techniques can be twisted and shaped to the meaning of your song and of your style. Yeah, she has such a clear, really clear, and I don't know, angelic is the wrong word, but it has a very retro kind of like folk singer feel to it. The material, though, still very intense. You know, that whole, what is that first line? She says, it was clear as all hell, you'd already left, you'd already gone. So she's not mincing words, and I like it. And then she twists that lyric, lost in the crowd, and at the end she says, I get lost in the crowd, seen and unseen. So she's talking about what I imagine is her recovery, her moving on, and her self-worth, even in the face of this sort of trope of getting over a breakup. She's very in control of her destiny, and a sentiment that we'd all like to relate to. We are going to move on to another English singer. I don't know why we have all these English singers this week. I must be on some kind of subliminal algorithm myself, but although many of the English singers don't show all that much of a accent when they sing, that's another story though. This is Leanne LaHavas. I love Leanne LaHavas. She's fantastic. She has the sound that it's like you can almost tell that she's smiling while she's singing. I can't describe it. There's something about the way she kind of shapes the end of her phrases and swallows some of the longer vowels, but you know, she's hard to classify. She definitely has a little bit of like a neo-soul vibe, but a lot of it is very sort of comes out of the folk tradition. She plays guitar very well, both acoustic and electric. And the song we're going to listen to, which is called Midnight, features a very dynamic guitar line. She's playing it here on electric, but there's also a great recording. I was just not quite brave enough to use this recording for the podcast. But you really should check out, she does like a webcam concert, and I mean, she's just singing into her iPad. Like, there's no mic, you can hear when she leans back from the microphone that the sound gets a little further away, and then she comes back, and it's just like the ultimate, I'm just going to do my song, I don't need to be fancy. I wasn't brave enough to put it on because I'm trying to make the podcast sound as professional as possible, but so I'm going to play a little more professionally recorded live version, but you should check that out. Anyway, the song's called Midnight. We're going to listen to her acoustic version, and then I have a little treat for you afterwards, but here again we're listening to her vibrato. This is an electric guitar, so we're hearing a different kind of articulation, meaning like a different way that the notes speak, like the way the notes begin their entrances and fade out. But clearly a choice of hers, and adds a little bit to the color, and listen to the story that she's going through as she solo performs guitar and vocals on her song in front of a live audience. This is Leanne LaHavas with her song Midnight.
I'm going to play the final song. It's called Midnight.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Again, Leanne Lajavis performing solo, electric guitar, and vocals. You can see what a skillful performer she is. Just effortlessly slides into that little game with the audience. And I love the breakdown section where she just leaves the guitar out and wails on top of wails at that end of the verse. So cool. So. Clearly she's very rhythmic, both with her singing and her guitar playing, and she doesn't need to be loud or super intense to make that happen, which is the mark of a good performer. It's almost like she encourages you to kind of lean in just a little bit and listen more closely to hear that sort of funky feel to it. I am going to break now from our theme and, as the final example, play the actual album version of that song, Midnight, and you're going to hear just the absolute beautiful masterpiece collective of funkiness, production, instruments that really bring the song to life. Clearly it was there to begin with, but I just couldn't stop listening to this. So we're going to end our podcast today with Leanne Lajavis's studio recording, the full band recording of that same song, Midnight. This is from her album Blood. Enjoy.
A long, long
That song does not make you want to dance. Check your pulse. You might be in immediate need of help. Leanne LeHavis, Midnight, the studio version off her album Blood. Oh, so good. So much fun. It reminds me a little bit of the Michael Kiwakuna song that Rob Jost, in his interview way back in our Music Works Remote Resources Archives, referenced. Our theme was vocals and chords, guitar chords, and that relationship. And as you can see from her solo version, it's a fantastic song. She's a fantastic performer. She's able to gather up and muster up all of the rhythm and the nuance. But it is always fun to listen to the final version. I thought I would leave you with that today. I want to thank you so much for being with us. The Music Works podcast. We are Real Music Talk with Music Works NYC. My name is Jesse Newman. I'm the director. Please check back to our podcast frequently and check our website, www.musicworksnyc.org. We are putting up resources for every age group, especially now coming up to a summer where we may have less summer camp than we normally do. We're going to try to put up a lot of stuff for kids of every age, so check that out. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Jesse Newman, and we will see you soon. Bye, everyone.